Autumn in New York. Brian Lemon, Dave Green and Alan Ganley. I'll be back at the same time next Saturday with music from Count Basie, Dizzy Gillespie, Howard McGee, Johnny Dodds and King Oliver, amongst others. Until then, from me, Alan Shipton, goodbye.
Get away from it all and join us for lunch here on BBC Radio 3. The Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert, the finest chamber music played by the finest chamber musicians every day at 1 o'clock. On Friday, a week of music from the Bath International Festival culminates with Mendelssohn's towering contribution to chamber music, his octet, performed by the Danish and Sacconi quartets in Bath's assembly rooms. The Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert from Bath, 1 o'clock this Friday on BBC Radio 3.
Well, now it's time for Jazz Lineup, presented this week by Claire Martin.
Hello and welcome along. On today's show, we bring you more music from Lithuania's Danaės Pelaskas group, with the second part of their concert recorded at the Claw Ballroom at the South Bank Centre as part of the 2013 London Jazz Festival. Kevin LeGenre is back for his feature, Now Is The Time, and this week he's chosen something very close to my heart as we revisit a release by singer-pianist Shirley Horn. Plus, an interview with one of America's great pianist talents. Here is a taster from his new album. Can you guess who it is? Well, did you guess who that was? It's Brad Meldow, with quite a different sound than usual from his collaborative project with the drummer Mark Juliana called Meliana. And it sees Brad focusing on keyboards and synthesizers with Mark on drums and effects. Stay tuned for an interview with Brad and Julian Joseph later on in the show. Well, so to open the show, let's start with one of the most inventive and contemporary orchestras who are really making a name for themselves worldwide. Led by saxophonist Tommy Smith, the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra have just released American Adventure, which is the result of sessions that took place over 2 days last June in New York with special guest soloists. Well, here's the incredible vibes man Joe Locke swinging hard with the band on Wayne Shorter's Yes or No. taken from the new release American Adventure, which is out on the 17th of February on the Spartacus record label. That was Joe Locke playing the vibraphone with the Scottish National Jazz Orchestra on Wayne Shorter's Yes or No. Other guests on that record include Mike Stern, Kurt Elling, Randy Brecker and Bill Evans. The playing is sensational throughout and features some of Scotland's finest players, including Brian Kellogg on the piano, Conrad Wisniewski on tenor sax and Alan Koska on drums and, of course, Tommy Smith at the helm. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, it's time for our Now is the Time feature, where I'm joined by musicologist, journalist and broadcaster Kevin Ajomra as he profiles a modern classic. Kevin, it's great to see you. Well, I'm really excited about the album you've chosen, as often I don't know the artist you've chosen at all.
Well, you do know this one. I'm very certain of that. It's the great Shirley Horn with Close Enough for Love, which is one of her best ever records and I think one of the great jazz vocal albums.
Mm. Washington-based singer-pianist. I mean, not as a sort of household name like
Ella
and
well
Sarah.
Not as well-known as she should have been, yeah.
Right, absolutely. So this Irving Berlin, I Got Lost in His Arms, starts us off.
That starts us off, but I think, generally speaking, we should point out that this is one of the great kind of romance albums as well. I think even if you're not particularly into jazz vocal as such, I think you'd really enjoy this album because the performances, not just from her but from the band, are really, really strong. And you get the sense of somebody who understands what a love song is. Because that's not an easy thing to do, to really make it convincing.
Of course.
Because she's doing the Great American Songbook in no uncertain terms here, as we'll hear in a minute. And every lyric, every word, every sentiment is very important, and she makes it believable.
Well, she famously said, it is all about the lyric. It's all about the lyric. So let's hear her doing a beautiful arrangement of Irving Berlin's I Got Lost in His Arms.
I get lost in his arms, and I had to stay. It was dark in his arms, and I lost my way. From the dark came a voice, and it seemed to say, there you go. There you go. How I felt when I fell, I just can't recall. But his arms held me fast, and it broke the fall. And I said to my heart, as it foolishly came jumping all around, I got lost, and look what I found. How I felt when I fell, I just can't recall. But his arms held me fast, and it broke the fall. And I said to my heart, as it foolishly kept jumping all around, all around. I got lost, but look what I found.
Shirley Horn with I Got Lost in His Arms by Irving Berlin, and that starts our Now's the Time feature with Kevin Legendre. Don't know what else. I melt every time I hear her. As you know, she's my absolute number one. Interesting album, because it was the beginning of the sort of second half of her career, really, wasn't it? She really got a second wind.
There was this resurgence in the 80s. This album came out in 1989. Because she recorded as early as 1961, I think. And she also, it's worth pointing out that she was one of those singers who had the absolute respect of the top musicians from the bebop era and the modern jazz era. And she'd worked with Miles Davis, and all of these very serious musicians really paid her a lot of respect. Mm. And I think that on this album, what you hear is somebody who's just very, very poised and very calm, and who knows all about balance and measure. When you listen to that track, there's so much space in it, and there's so much of a sense of it breathing and her not rushing and really enjoying each moment, or realizing that each lyric can settle in the mind of the listener and it doesn't need to have musical accompaniment all the time. There are some very, very long gaps in between her words and her piano chords. But that's the sign of a singer who's really
that's
confident.
That's phrasing, absolutely.
And who really understands what phrasing is and how you need to let these things unfold in their own time.
That was really well said. I couldn't agree more. So much empathy as well from her bass player and her drummer. The bass player is Charles Abels, who was with her for years, and Steve Williams on drums. They just really are all in it together, aren't they? They are completely sensing what she's going to do next.
Empathy is the word. There's real communication, and they all understand that you can let music flow and you don't have to have lots of notes and lots of chords, and that dynamics and actually going from slightly louder sounds to softer sounds, really having the range of sound, just moving from, you know, something which is very, very subtle to something which has a bit more emphasis. They've got that down pat, and they really display it on this track.
Mm. Let's go to the second, and in fact it's the title track of the album, Close Enough for Love. Johnny Mandel and Paul Williams, I mean, beautiful rendition of this.
Absolutely. Again, it's that sense of poise, timing. This is another fantastic ballad. This reminds me a little bit of Autumn Leaves, I think, in the kind of melancholy of it, slowed down even more. And she's got a fantastic touch on the piano.
Just about to talk about her harmony, actually.
I mean,
when she selected this song, you know, Johnny Mandel is notoriously fussy about harmony, and he was warned, you know, that she's, in, you know, changed some of the harmony setting. And apparently he said, Shirley's one of the best singers, one of the greatest pianists I've ever heard, and I'm sure any changes she makes will only enhance it. I mean, that's some recommendation to trust her to voice these harmonies like this.
Yeah, but she did it really well. And you get the sense, again, of her being guided by what the underlying sentiment of the song is, not doing too much. Just really applying subtlety and in some of those inversions that she's got, you know, the changes in the harmony. It's just, it really enhances just the colour of the song.
Do you think, I've talked about this a lot with singers and singer pianists, when you're playing and accompanying yourself, it's a special magic that you can't possibly get as a singer with a pianist, you know, because she knows what she's going to do. She can move around in her own time, and that must, you know, a magnificent sense of knowing what to do next, because it was just, it came to her and she set herself up the best way possible. I'm very jealous of that. I wish I could do that.
It's a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
Well, I mean, what a talent, you know.
Yeah, you've got to have, I think, anticipation as well as great timing and great precision. You know, it's not just about finding the chords, it's about playing them at exactly the right moment.
Well, let's hear Shirley Horn now from the album Close Enough to Love with the title track.
You and I, an unmatched pair, took the time to touch, to share. Worlds apart, the night we met, we braved the odds and won the bet. Not perfect yet, but close enough for love. How old-fashioned, pure romance. Share a kiss and share a dance. Share the body and bouquet. We'll taste the wine another day when you and I are close enough. Not just lovers, more than friends. Who knows where one starts, one ends. Tracing lives through sleepless nights that I'll remember always. And goodbyes and tearful looks, hold up well in poems and books. But you and I have life to hold, the greatest story never told, not perfect yet, but close enough for love. Not just lovers, more than friends. Who knows where one starts, one ends. Tracing life through sleepless nights that I'll remember always. And always. Long goodbyes and tearful looks. Hold up well in poems and books. But you and I have life to hold. The greatest story never told. Not perfect yet, but close enough for love.
The theme from the 1979 movie Agatha, that was of course Shirley Horn singing Johnny Mandel and Paul Williams' Close Enough for Love. And Kevin, we were just, well, it's sublime, isn't it?
We were lost in reverie, I think.
We really were. And talking about that slow ballad really being her trademark, really. I mean, even though she swings great and plays without singing great, it was that intimacy of those slow ballads.
She excelled at that. And I think anybody who can take on that kind of material and have that sense of total command without having to play too much.
Mm.
You know, minimalism is a word that I think can be overused, but at times she really plays with silence.
Mm.
You know, she doesn't overdo it at all. And I think when you hear her do a wordless vocal, they're usually short solos, you know, where she doesn't flood you with loads of notes. She's not trying to overwhelm you with notes.
Mm.
But the ones that she chooses and the way that she moves between her kind of slightly harder attack, a high register and a low register, you know, moving between the registers, I think it's just brilliantly done.
So sophisticated, so classy.
So much finesse.
And really, a lot of the singers that are out now who over-egg and embellish and embroider, and they could really do with sitting and listening to Shirley Horn all day and really understand the less is more principle, because she's
pace.
The queen.
It's all about pace, and it's all about knowing that a song and a performance has a beginning, middle and end. It's
sure.
not just about the flurry at the beginning, which is going to impress everybody. Mm. It's about how that story unfolds.
She didn't have an amazing range, but what she did do, she wasn't scared to go up higher, that last little bit at the end there. And she actually could hit notes. I think she played safe quite a bit. I think she had more than she sometimes would give. Again, restrain and just, you know, calculating when would be the right note, the right time. Absolute musician. Total class. Let's talk about her career before we play the last track, because the last 15 years were good for her before she got ill and, you know, sadly couldn't play and had another pianist.
Well, this album came out on Verve and it received some pretty major marketing, and I think that was a real plus for her, you know, to be signed to a big company and to have a lot of publicity and for people to recognise that she'd been around for decades and that she was at her creative peak. You know, this is an album, we need to point out again, it's 1989, so she'd already been recording for the best part of 30-odd years or so, and she just sounds on great form. So, it's things coming good at a latter stage of her career.
So let's talk about the last tune, because it's more upbeat. We've talked about her doing...
This is a real contrast. So this is a version of Cole Porter's Get Out of Town, and she's pushing more. This is a swinging track. This is very bluesy. But again, there's some subtlety here as well. The word and the kind of feeling that I really get from it, there's one word in particular which kind of sums up, I think, the whole piece, and that is the way that she attacks disappear. If you listen to the way that she invests so much feeling into that phrase, just disappear. But
just
again,
disappear.
She doesn't overdo it. And she retains her balance, even though this is much more upbeat and much more energised.
You mentioned earlier, Kevin, that Miles Davis was a big fan of Shirley Horn, and in fact he used to ask for her to open for him when he played in New York. And the last recording he ever did was on Shirley Horn's album.
There could be no greater endorsement than that.
There could be no greater endorsement than that. But let's not forget to say all the singers that cite Shirley Horn as a major influence, from Diana Krall to Dee Dee Bridgewater, to myself, to everyone I know, Leanne Carroll. We all absolutely love this woman. Norma Winston, great fan. I mean, she's really been an inspiration. worldwide to singers.
And very respected.
Very yeah. important figure. Yeah. And again, here she is displaying, as you say, the other sort of sassy swinging side to her with Cole Porter's Get Out of Town. This has been the best Now's the Time for me, Kevin. Thank you for choosing this.
It's been
this.
A pretty good one for me as well. It's my pleasure.
Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be content to charm all the birds out the trees? Just disappear. I care for you much too much. And when you're near so close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be contented to charm all the birds out the trees? Just disappear. I care for you much too much. And when you're near so close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Just disappear. I care for you much too much. And when you're near close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set. On your mark, get set. So on your mark, get set, move.
Shirley Horn with Charles Abels on the bass and Steve Williams on the drums, and that track Get Out of Town, bringing our Now's the Time feature to an end. And my thanks to Kevin Legendre for making that feature such a treat for me. Last week we played you the first half of a concert set from the Danius Palauskas group as they made their London Jazz Festival debut at the Claw Ballroom at the South Bank Centre as part of last year's London Jazz Festival. Well, they're regarded as one of the most influential Lithuanian jazz groups and may rightly be called ambassadors of Lithuanian jazz. Characterised by their use of electric and acoustic instruments and strong original compositions which cover swing and groove, let's hear two more pieces from this high-energy combo, kicking off with Expromptum. We'll be right back.
Thank you very much. And next piece called Machine Shop.
That was the track Machine Shop by the Danius Palaskas Group. And for full details of the band lineup and all the tracks played on today's show, go to the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. And that was recorded on the Jazz Lineup stage as part of last year's London Jazz Festival. We'll hear more from that concert set a little later on. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3 on FM, online and on digital radio. Pianist Brad Meldow and drummer Mark Juliana have been performing together for several years now as a duo, and they're about to release their debut recording entitled Meliana, Taming the Dragon. Brad plays Fender Rhodes and synthesizers, and Mark plays drums and effects on 12 original compositions. And recently, Jazz Lineup's Julian Joseph talked to Brad about the new project. And you can hear them in conversation after this piece, taken from the new album, Meliana, Taming the Dragon. We'll be right back.
And we just heard Sassiest Sassafras from the new album by Brad Meldow and Mark Juliana called Meliana. And I'm very, very happy to say that Brad Meldow is in the studio with me. Brad, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Julian. That's great to be here. Thanks.
So this album, in the context of the duet music that you've done before, because you've duetted with Renee Fleming and also Kevin Hayes, all really interesting projects. I mean, the Kevin Hayes project sort of looks one way on the surface, but actually involves a composer
right.
that you work together
That's
with.
That's right, yeah.
So, and then Renee Fleming, the album you did with her, Love Sublime, I thought was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I love the setting to words and the textures and the atonality very much. Yeah. And so they all have quite a different complexion. And this one seems like you guys can get together, you and Mark can get together and just play.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. And it definitely, like you say, it differentiates it from the other ones that were much more written, with the exception of what I've been doing with Chris Steele. That's a little more open-ended in nature. But Mark and I started, before we recorded, we started with some live gigs. And we really, for the first tour we did, that was 14 gigs in Europe, we made the commitment to really go out and play every night without writing anything.
Right.
So we were really at the beginning sort of this pretty extreme notion of let's not write anything and let's not repeat anything. And then gradually out of that tour, things started to evolve that took the character of songs. So that was kind of a cool backwards process of arriving at compositions. So now at this point, what we're doing is we're playing some of the material from the record live, but we're still trying to keep a certain percentage of the live performance pretty open-ended. And then that seems to lead to other things. So it's nice because out of a lot of projects I've done, I've really written, you know, spilled a lot of ink. And this one, you know, the most I'll write is, you know, I call them stems. You know, maybe it's a bass line and a chord sequence, and then it's usually not much more than that, you know. So I like that. Yeah.
Another thing that I notice is that you brought the spoken word into it. You've narrated The Dreamer, and the title track is called Taming the Dragon. And it's very conceptual, it's philosophical. Just tell us a little bit about Taming the Dragon.
Well, Taming the Dragon was really a dream that I had. And in fact, yeah, I'm almost positive I had that on this first tour that Mark and I did before we recorded. And, you know, the thing about telling a dream is it can be kind of risky business, you know, in terms of gauging the interest of your listener, because no matter how interesting the dream is, the end is always the same. You wake up, you know, so it's like, do I really want to? But this one, I thought, you know, it had, the more I wrote it when I woke up and the more I kind of organized it in my head, I thought, well, there might be something of interest to other people in terms of what it's about, you know. So then I got the idea of setting it to music, and it's not something we realized until we went into the studio and we had those sounds in our ears and the headphones and the drums treated a certain way.
We're going to have a listen to that track. This is from Meliana. This is Taming the Dragon.
I had this trippy dream where this cat was driving me around in an old convertible the whole time around L.A. Later on, it turned into a VW van, and near the end, it was more like this spaceship kind of thing. We were high up, looking over the road. But the front console was shaped like a van, and it still had the convertible top. The guy who was driving me around was an older dude, an old hipster with a scratchy voice, kind of like Joe Wall sings. But he kind of had some of that vibe and energy of Dennis Hopper and Easy Rider. Yeah, like if you can imagine a cross between Joe Walsh and Dennis Hopper, that's the dude who was driving me. We were heading due north on the PCH, coming up to the big stoplight where Sunset Boulevard ends. We were going to head out past there towards Malibu, maybe circle up through Topanga Canyon, and come back through the valley. The light was beautiful in the dream with all that nice washed out orange from the pollution. So I had this happy feeling in my stomach, but also like this scared feeling like something was gonna happen, but I didn't know what. Anyhow, as we were approaching the light at sunset, all of a sudden this cat in a sports car came out of nowhere and just cut us off. My man slammed on the brakes and narrowly averted a mashup. Got my blood boiling, but, you know, I wasn't the one driving. Stoplight, and there he was glaring at us through his rearview mirror, and he was all like, "Yeah, that's right, I cut you off. What are you gonna do about it?" So I said to Joe Walsh / Dennis Hopper, I'll just call him Joe now. So I said to Joe, "Man, aren't you gonna say some shit to that douchebag?" I was all puffed up and pissed off, but I was sitting in the passenger seat. So Joe was quiet and looked straight ahead and said, "You know, man, the only way I'm gonna put some shit out there like that is I'm ready to dance with that cat. You know what I mean? All you've got are your actions, man. And don't forget, your words are actions too. You put something out there, there's consequences, you know? You want to dance for that dude?" That Joe was driving me around everywhere, and it's like I wasn't even thanking him. I realized that at first I thought he was kind of like wild and a bad influence on me, like from my party days, but actually the whole time he was kind of like driving me around and taking care of me, watching my back, like with that crazy dude in the small car, like how he actually handled the whole thing real noble and didn't get all ruffled. He was talking me down from something. I only realized that when I woke up. Funny how sometimes with dreams you don't realize who's your friend until after you wake up. Then you wake up and you get this clarity and you see that maybe all those different people were you in the dream, and that they're there to lead you either to good or trouble. And the person who's actually acting as you in the dream is kind of like this blind idiot who's just barreling through the whole dream like I was, trying to be all tough and shit. Telling old Joe to go start something with that punk in the sports car. Yeah, but maybe like that crazy dude in the other car was me as well. All those people were just a composite of my own shit. All different parts of me. Like you've got this one part of you that watches out for you and keeps you steady. You've got this other part that's raging and full of anger. And those two are vying for your attention, like old Joe and that crazy dude in the dream. And there's just you and you're listening to both of these voices. But they're all a part of you. You know, I think of it like taming a dragon. A dragon is a crazy dude. And if you don't watch out, he'll bite your ass hard. So you need old Joe there to set you straight. But Joe knows about the dragon. Because Joe and the dragon are both part of you. So you don't try to kill the dragon. You know, the dragon's where you get all that voodoo shit from. That's where you get your power from. You don't want to snuff him out. You want to tame him. You want to actually make friends with him and harness his power so you can use it.
Taming the Dragon from the new album by Brad Meldow and Mark Juliana, the drummer and keyboardist, but not in that order. Brad Meldow is the pianist. If you didn't know that, then you should. And I'm very glad to say Brad is here with me today, speaking to us here on Jazz Lineup. Brad, the title Taming the Dragon, how does it reflect on the rest of the titles? Because you've got Lux, which is the second tune.
Mm-hmm.
You Can't Go Back Now, The Dreamer, as we mentioned. Elegy for Amelia E., which is Earhart, I
mm-hmm.
presume,
mm-hmm.
and is quite obvious when you listen to it. Sleeping Giant, Hungry Ghost, Just Call Me Nige,
mm-hmm.
is it?
Mm-hmm.
Something that we'd say here.
Yeah.
Sassy as Sassafras, which we opened with, Swimming, and then London Gloaming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a few moods on the record. The Sassayas, Sassafras, and Just Call Me Nige are more a thing I'm really having fun with Mark, because he loves a lot of dance music. Just a more fun kind of grooving outing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot about kind of musical archetypes for me. What is music doing? And sometimes I think of it in this archetype way, and I think that a lot of music has what I've named myself a kind of dreamer aspect, and a lot of it has a kind of dragon aspect. And I guess the dreamer of the two, on this record, it might be the track The Dreamer, obviously, itself, Elegy for Amelia Earhart, and Sleeping Giant. All those tracks have a kind of dreamer quality, which to me is something that's more, has a passive quality to it, as if the musical subject is dreaming the music. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but sometimes I've dreamed this beautiful music, and then I've woken up and it's kind of slipping away from my ears, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that sometimes music in our waking state can denote that kind of feeling of something that is just beyond your grasp, that you can't quite grasp. And the dragon music, I think, is more the dragon in the narrative there is kind of this archetypal figure for me that represents all your impulses that, if unchecked, could be unskillful or destructive. But if you can learn how to control those impulses, they're also what you can use them to empower yourself.
Yeah. Well, Hungry Ghost is the last track that we're going to be listening to. It's a nice jaunt in 7/4.
Yes.
And what's really great is the energy really builds between the two of you, between you and Mark, and you get a chance to really share probably what is the core of the project between, you know, your ideas, your rhythmic ideas, your journey together improvisationally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to characterize it. I think this one is maybe more, it's the more jazz sounding in the sense of the way we're rhythmically interacting with each other. It has more of that give and take with his cymbals and what I'm doing. So,
Well, Brad, it's been amazing speaking to you.
Thanks for having me, Julian. And pleasure to be here, yeah.
It's lovely to see you and lovely to hear the new record.
Great.
And I think the audience are in for a great treat.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brad Meldow. This is Hungry Ghost from Meliana.
Brad Meldow in conversation with Julian Joseph, and that last track, Hungry Ghost, is from the forthcoming CD, Meliana Taming the Dragon, which is out on February the 24th on the Nonesuch label. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, now let's go back to the last part of our concert set tonight and the final session from the Lithuanian jazz group led by pianist Dainius Palauskas. Recorded at the South Bank Centre in the Claw Ballroom as part of the 2013 London Jazz Festival, let's hear them playing Safaga.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was the track White, concluding our concert set tonight from the Danaeus Pelaskas group, who certainly made a great impression on the crowd at the South Bank Centre, and they really did prove they were ambassadors for Lithuanian jazz on their London Jazz Festival debut. Well, that's almost it for this week's show, but there's plenty more jazz on Radio 3 with Jeffrey Smith's Jazz at midnight tonight. And on Monday night at 11, Jez Nelson presents highlights from the 2013 Saffelden Jazz Festival, and that's on Jazz on 3. On next week's jazz lineup, Julian Joseph presents music from Art Thiemann, recorded at this year's 10th Jazz on a Winter's Weekend from Southport. Well, just to wet your whistle, here is Art Thiemann, who's featured as a special guest in Alan Barnes's quintet, and they're having fun on a Calypso number called Limbo Jazz by Duke Ellington. From me, Claire Martin, until next time, bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Limbo Jazz, performed by the Alan Barnes Quintet featuring Art Thiemann. And it ends this week's Jazz Lineup. The programme was presented by Claire Martin and produced in Glasgow by Lindsay Pell and Shona Pugh. And Jazz Lineup will be back at the same time next Saturday evening, 6 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3. 7:30, time now for Radio 3, live in concert. Tonight it's from Manchester and it's introduced by Christopher Cook.
This evening's voice in the Strauss's Voice series here at the Bridgewater Hall belongs to Arga Mikulai, who's going to sing six of the most popular of Richard Strauss's orchestral songs, including Morgen, Wiegenlied and Waldseligkeit. After that, Vasily Sinaisky in the BBC Philharmonic will give us an insider's view of life with the Strauss family in the Sinfonia Domestica. But we begin with a hero whose happiest home was in the arms of a woman, Don Juan. Don Juan was Strauss's second symphonic poem, but his first big success. Indeed, it was an immediate success throughout Germany after its first performance in Weimar in November 1889, where Strauss had just taken up a position as assistant conductor of the opera. But this isn't Mozart and Da Ponte's Don, mocking eternity after a life of skirt chasing. This is a kinder hero, based on an unfinished 19th century verse drama by Nicolas Lenau, in which Don Juan is disturbed by the hurt that he inflicts on others and welcomes death as a kind of release. Not that you'd recognise this kindly figure in the opening pages of the score, which resemble nothing so much as a dress, or rather undress, rehearsal for the prelude to Strauss's opera Der Rosenkavalier. No prizes for guessing what the trumpet's doing with the strings at the start of Don Juan. It's certainly a good deal more than youth's fiery pulses racing. That's a quotation from Lenau's drama that Strauss puts at the head of his score. Then the Don is in love with a deliciously sensual oboe, playing the kind of Straussian melody that could charm birds from out of a tree. A rousing call from the horns, four of them, whisks our lover off to a carnival, and after one final burst of pleasure, our hero meets his end and breathes his last on the strings after a fatal duel. Here now is Vasily Sinaisky to conduct the BBC Philharmonic in a performance of Richard Strauss's tone poem, Don Juan.